Thank you for your attention. I'm Dan Gibbons, the CEO of the City Club of Chicago, and it is so great to have you all here. Thank you for that. On behalf of our wonderful chairwoman, who you'll hear from at the close of the program, Jackie Robinson Ivey. Jackie, thank you on behalf of the City Club Board for being here for what's going to be, I know, an incredible discussion and topic, and one that I think we're going to be talking about more and more as the months go on, and for all sorts of reasons, as I believe water is the future of our city and our entire region. I think so many of you in the room understand that and agree, but we've got to get that word out and make sure the rest of the world knows what we have here and all that surrounds it. So we're going to hear more about that today. But I want to thank first of all of those who helped make these programs possible, and especially today's sponsors. We have Current, of course, Current Water. Thank you. University of Chicago and the Pritzker School of Molecular Engineering. University of Chicago, a great partner of the City Club on many fronts, as is the Shedd Aquarium. And that's one thing I was referring to was a future program that we're talking about with the Shedd as yet another sort of follow-on to this topic. Clayco, of course, always great corporate and civic supporters. M. Harris, Melissa, thank you for helping to pull all this together. Christopher Burke Engineering is here, and they're here so often at City Club, as is Loyola University Chicago, another great partner with so much more to come on that front. Phil Hale is here. Mayor Brown is here, and we love Mayor Brown, especially Nick Valerano. I know he's not here with us today because he had a baby recently, so congratulations to Nick, and thanks to all that Mayor Brown does for the civic community and for the City Club of Chicago. And just some great people. The room is full of great people. Michael Fosnock is here from Clayco. Thank you, Michael. You know, all you've done for and continue to do now at Clayco and from World Business Chicago and the mayor's office. The president of the MWRD, Carrie Steele, is here. Carrie, welcome back. And yet another program. We are very much looking forward to having Carrie Steele. Keep your eyes on our email list. We're going to have something coming out soon, and look forward to welcoming her back to this podium. David Greasing is here from the BGA. Thank you, David. Another great partner of this City Club. Jim Kirk is here from Cranes, although I haven't seen Jim. Jim's on his way. Just a great group of people. You know, we've got philanthropy, we've got business, we've got politics, and that's what we do here at the City Club. It's such an honor also to have Ambassador Faye Hartog-Levin here. Ambassador, she touches on all of those, right, at the Council of Global Affairs, or you know, and all of the civic engagement, the philanthropy that she and her her wonderful husband and family have done for this city. Thank you. This is the room where you want to be. This is the room where it happens. And Greg Goldner's here. Just so many amazing people. Thank you all for being here and for supporting City Club as we reengage and you know, look to the future. And as I said, water is such an important part of that future. So we're going to hear a little more about it. The Midwest has a moonshot moment, as we've heard that's been talked about, for climate leadership, and to realize it, we really need to accelerate the pace of water innovation. So home to, as we all in this room I hope know, we are home to 1/5 of the world's fresh water here in the Great Lakes. And I believe, and I think we all agree, that can really lead the world in solving some of these water challenges. So Great Lakes Renew, which we'll hear more about, a six-state bipartisan coalition based here in Chicago, has won an historic investment of up to $160 million over the next 10 years from the National Science Foundation. Thank you to the National Science Foundation. To turn water waste into wealth. So we're going to hear more about this. Our moderator is going to be Michael Hawthorne from the Chicago Tribune. Michael, thank you for being here. Yeah. And leading this tremendous endeavor is Elena Harkness. Elena, we'll We're going to welcome her up in just a minute. We also are going to hear from, and Elena will introduce, Jung Hong Chen from the Crown Family Molecular Engineering Professor at the University of Chicago Pritzker School of Molecular Engineering. That's just another reminder. University of Chicago, Pritzker, Crown Family, Professor, Molecular Engineering. We had Governor Pritzker last week. We had the Crown Family a few months ago here at City Club. We had University of Chicago here today and weeks ago and months ago. That's what we're doing. We're bringing all these amazing people who have transformed Chicago and now identifying the people who are going to transform it further for the next generation. And I believe Elena is one of those helping to lead the charge, and we're looking forward to hearing from her. And to do that, before that happens, we're going to kick off a video, and then I'm going to ask Elena to come up here and share a few words before hosting the rest of this conversation. So thank you all again for being here. It's going to be a great discussion. There's going to be so much more to come. And cue the video, please.
In a world of increasing water and resource scarcity, waste has no place. Great Lakes Renew is an engine to transform waste into health and wealth for the people and places that need it most. We're creating novel resource recovery technologies and speeding the transition to a circular economy, built in the Great Lakes but made for the world. We're going to separate PFAS and other forever chemicals from our water, extract critical minerals like cobalt, lithium, and nickel to use in onshore battery production and manufacturing. We're going to keep nutrients like phosphates and nitrates out of our waterways and put them to productive use. Great Lakes Renew is a regional partnership that weaves leadership from industry, utilities, community, universities, and national labs. We'll demonstrate our innovations from lab to market through connected test beds in Illinois, Ohio, and Wisconsin. We'll test our inventions at the Lake Erie Watershed Testbed, hosted by the Cleveland Water Alliance. In Wisconsin, Rapid Radicals, a startup spun out of Marquette University, is testing their technology for more efficient wastewater treatment at the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. Curren is a Chicago-based water innovation hub, and as the anchor for Great Lakes Renew, we're building on a track record of partnerships and collaboration to get things done. Great Lakes Renew's accelerator will get products from testbed to market, and our network of impact investors and venture capitalists will help our water innovators grow. The promise of Great Lakes Renew depends on people. People who channel their passion for water into jobs and careers in the blue economy. Great Lakes Renew will transform the ways we manage and value water, our most precious resource. Join us in our journey to turn waste into health and wealth and build a more prosperous future for our region, the nation, and the world. It is such a joy to be here with you all today. Thank you so much for coming out to learn more about this initiative and the work we're doing at Curren. I hope that video already sparked your curiosity in learning more about Curren and the work that we do and this major collaborative regional endeavor that we call Great Lakes Renew. So thrilled to be here today at the City Club to talk about it. I have been thrilled to be coming to the City Club for nearly 20 years. And I just think it's wonderful to have this civic table to talk about the issues of our day and then go get to work on bringing them to life. So this win for Renew has indeed put our region's water innovation leadership on the national radar, with recognition from the highest levels of government that the Great Lakes are critical to the resilience of our planet, the domestic security of our supply chains, and the prosperity of our national economy. But before we get to the new in Renew, I want to acknowledge a few of the leaders and visionaries and mentors and builders in this room today without whom we never would have made it this far. So first, to UChicago Pritzker School of Molecular Engineering Dean Nadia Mason and Wanda Pablo, the Executive Vice President for Science Innovation and National Labs. This has truly been a joint effort, and we would not be standing on the stage but for the leadership of UChicago and Argonne and Jun Hong's wonderful leadership as the lead water strategist for Argonne National Lab and in his role at the Crown as the Crown Family Professor. It is a no small task to build something of this size, and having the heft of those major research institutions at our back and at the table has been critical. The mentor table in front of me, I have to acknowledge for so much over the last two decades. Maria Hibbs, Craig Howard, Bob Weisbord, and Ann Evans, who have inspired me in so many ways to become a builder and entrepreneur. My dad, Paul Yasinovichus, who was the first entrepreneur model in my life. And my team, who I am constantly learning from every single day. So if you haven't come and met the fabulous team of Current or part of them, they're up here too. I'm just so grateful for their leadership. We have Current board members and supporters in the room, World Business Chicago, Mayor Brown, thank you. And of course, President Steele, really appreciate your leadership. Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago is one of the absolute founders of Current and has been by our side ever since. Thank you. Yes. I also do want to acknowledge that wonderful video and so much more of the exceptional communications work that we do is led and championed by M. Harris and this team up here. So if you love our comms like we do, it's hard to talk about. This is some hard science to talk about. We've been thinking about it a long time, and we really appreciate their help in translating it and bringing it out to the world. So from our blue planet's very beginnings, water's been key to the health and prosperity of our world. Our first cities grew where fresh water was abundant, and even today, 90% of the global population lives within 10 kilometers of a freshwater source. And today, we are sitting less than a mile from the shore of the Great Lakes, where we do have one-fifth of the world's fresh surface water. It's Chicago's origin story. We were founded at the intersection of the lakes and the river, in a vast wetland that we often forget about today, the Calumet region that was actually once the Everglades of the North. It's captured in our flag, the one blue band representing our Great Lake Michigan and the North Branch of the Chicago River, the other representing the South Branch and the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal that connects our region to the mighty Mississippi River. Our waterways have inspired some of Chicago's most ambitious and audacious plans, from Daniel Burnham's vision and Montgomery Ward's fight to keep our lakefront forever open, clear, and free, fight that continues today, reversing the flow of the Chicago River, to the recent decades of reinvestment that brought our Riverwalk to revitalize life, even making it possible to plan for a swim in the Chicago River later this fall. I know we have at least one lottery winner. Rich, I hope you don't mind calling you out. So we're going to be watching Rich. Our board member, Rich Asmus, has won a spot in the lottery. Is anyone else swimming? Yeah, in the room? Okay, so we'll maybe raise hands later and talk about whether we think he's a... But we'll be out there cheering you on. Navigating and initiating change in and around our waterways has been a constant for all Chicagoans, often with a forward-looking eye and a vision of the future that has yet to arrive. Now, the effects of climate change are already here on our doorstep. And while the idea of climate migration to our region used to seem a distant possibility, recent drought in the West and new demand on Lake Michigan's water supply, even in our own region, have made it part of our present. We need more audacious plans and actions to protect this precious natural endowment and enable all Chicagoans to benefit. We, and especially the civic leaders in this room today, have an opportunity and a responsibility to speed the pace of water innovation because we have no time to waste. We know that water will remain critical to the health and vitality of the people and ecosystems of our region, but it will also be increasingly critical to the health of our economy, and we don't talk about this nearly enough. Great Lakes Renew views the economic and environmental assets of our region and our world as fundamentally linked. The industries that are going to determine the future competitiveness and security of our region and the health of our planet are all going to depend on water. From quantum computing to the production of EV batteries, semiconductors, advanced manufacturing, and of course, agriculture and food innovation, all depend on water in their supply chains and directly to produce the goods and services we all rely on. With increasing water scarcity in other regions of the country, the Great Lakes states have a natural advantage. But we can't leverage this advantage if we continue to manage our water as the status quo. Today, the vast majority of us still take our water for granted. We waste far too much, and we reuse far too little. We use high-quality drinking water for industry when treated wastewater would meet the need. We flush a lot of valuable resources our wastewater carries down the drain. We have much more to do to plan for the increased demand that water scarcity elsewhere will drive for our region. And we have a major opportunity to leverage the future demand we know we can anticipate to move towards a better way of managing our water today. If we make bold, audacious plans, and if we figure out how to use our water and the valuable resources it carries more efficiently. So Current, the nonprofit water innovation hub that I lead, was launched way back in 2016 to be just that friendly disruptor of the status quo of managing water. And we have a three-part mission: to grow an inclusive blue economy, to accelerate innovation, and to solve the pressing water challenges we face today. We've moved to demonstrate the potential of cross-sector collaboration to establish our region as a powerful center of water solutions. And just last week, we celebrated our 8th anniversary, which was a really big milestone for us. Thank you. Thank you. I was just talking to President Steele about how when Current started, it was like, should we invest in this? What is this big idea? So making it to 8 was a milestone. And we had a number of key wins we were celebrating. One for H2 Now Chicago, our weather app for the Chicago River, and the first real-time water quality monitoring system in a major urban waterway, for which we were honored with the Chicago Innovation Award in 2022. And that's going to help Rich and all the other swimmers know, is it a good day to swim in the Chicago River when the swim comes this fall? We also launched Upstream Illinois, a first-of-its-kind blueprint, because we want the state of Illinois to be leading on plans to grow an inclusive blue economy. And we were grateful to have support from the U.S. Department of Commerce for that. And, of course, our biggest win and what we're here to talk about today, the National Science Foundation's designation as a regional innovation engine in January of this year, one of just 10 awarded nationally, and an endorsement that our vision of a circular and inclusive blue economy is critical to the future competitiveness, security, and prosperity of our nation. And it's a massive honor to have that designation here in Chicago. Thank you. And though the NSF win did catapult us to greater visibility and resources, Renew is far from an overnight success story. When we began building our coalition now 2 years ago, we were building on decades of effort and established water leadership across our 6-state region, all the way from Minnesota to Michigan. In Ohio and Wisconsin, we've had partner water innovation hubs just like Current, including the Water Council, Cleveland Water Alliance, who have also been leading the charge with very similar visions. But as a center of innovation and an economic reality, we are also so much more powerful working together across this region than competing. And economic development does tend to be a competitive state border driven prospect. So having the Great Lakes as a convening vision that's broader is a really excellent center of gravity for collaboration. So over the next 10 years, our bipartisan 6-state, 50 plus member coalition and growing will focus on combining all of these assets and all of this ambition to turn waste into wealth and health for the people and places in our region that need it most. For we also know that the pattern that repeats across our region is something we must address, that the people and places most harmed by environmental injustice are also the most likely to suffer from economic injustice. And that's why we're building a vision of inclusive innovation, partnering with workforce development and entrepreneurial leaders who are dedicated to building equity and opportunity and pathways to prosperity in this new economy, so that people are positioned to build wealth and ownership in these new and emerging industries. We're also going to invest millions of dollars in new technologies, and we'll talk more about that today, to recover and recycle valuable minerals like nickel, cobalt, and lithium from our water and remove toxic chemicals like PFAS. The moonshot of Renew focuses on these novel materials, processes, and all the artificial intelligence that's going to allow us to build essentially advanced filtration and separation technologies, which I like to describe this as super Britas. You all have one on your counter at home, but think about if it was at the molecular scale. And really, it's not filters, but membranes that can actually help us separate the bads and recover the goods, all the valuable critical minerals and nutrients and energy that we cannot afford to flush and waste. So I'd like to just see a show of hands. If you've heard of selective separation, raise your hand in this room. Okay, that is a lot more than I thought. So obviously we've selectively separated by coming to this talk today. Did not think that would be that many. That's great. So we have a lot less explanatory work to do than I thought. So that's good. But most people do not pay attention to this multi-billion dollar and growing market today. But as we all know well, the pace of technology change is fast and only getting faster. Just for example, the lithium-ion batteries that we take for granted and all have in every single one of our devices, invented in 1976. That's astonishing. We didn't have a lithium-ion battery. The first silicon chip, just barely a little bit earlier, 1959. Think about how long we've taken these for granted and how quickly the pandemic disruptions to chip production rocked our world. Today, the supply chain for these inventions is dominating not only our economy, but our political discourse, our trade relationships, our investments, things like the CHIPS and Science Act that brought the engines program to life. And in the future, these membrane technologies that will allow us to radically re-envision our water systems could become just as impossible to live without. We have all the assets here in the Great Lakes to become the center of that resource recovery revolution, to power these better ways of managing our water resources and point the way to a more circular and inclusive blue economy, built in the Great Lakes, made for the world. But what will this revolution take? Well, it's going to take industry leadership, I know you're here, willing to work differently to recognize the advantage our water gives and able to bring our commitment to steward this resource very carefully. Just 2 weeks ago, we launched Current's Industry Consortium to do just that, with Exelon and Ingredion as flagship sponsors and a roster of other prospects all joined in this vision of investment in R&D, innovation, and talent development that we will need to bring this vision to life. It's going to take ingenuity, more than a dozen research universities and a major national lab working in tandem to drive discovery, invention, and deployment of these breakthrough technologies. And it's going to take communities driving solutions, utilities piloting novel ways of working, engagement of our regulators to create enabling market conditions that will allow these innovations to scale. And in sum, it's going to take collective local leadership here in Chicago and across our bipartisan region for Great Lakes Renew, because innovation and stewardship of our Great Lakes resources always should be a consensus priority. Last week, I had the privilege of joining Chicago's mayor, Brandon Johnson, for his first international trip to Montreal, a trip he chose to focus on the vision of a green, blue economy for the Great Lakes region. The themes touched on the linked economic environmental future of Chicago, the importance of Great Lakes and global partnerships to realize our potential, and we're fortunate to have that bilateral partnership with Canada as we think about what it's going to take to protect these resources. But I think this was landmark recognition of the growing value of this vision and the importance that we all have in working together to realize it. So we're going to now have a conversation about to go deeper in some of these themes. But in closing, I just want to say we've had a lot of great coverage of Great Lakes Renew recently. Thank you to our comms team and the great work we've all done to try to tell this story in ways that are compelling. But in one recent article, Site Selection magazine said, Great Lakes Renew is a project so broad and ambitious that at first glance, it might seem pie in the sky. So I think they might have meant pizza pie by the lake. Like, I'm not sure what they meant there, but I will say that those are exactly the kinds of plans and projects that Chicago does best. And I am counting on each and every one of you to help us bring the vision of Great Lakes Renew to reality. Thank you. June Hong and Michael, come join me on stage.
All right.
Do you have space?
Good.
Okay. What a juggle.
Well done. Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. We're going to have a conversation. You know a lot about
this. Let's have this conversation.
Yeah.
So I tend to write about the bad things. the things that
That's
are going wrong and why aren't they better. So talking about good things, I'm a little disconcerted. Feels a little disconcerting. But I do feel in my time as an environment reporter that regulation and economic realities tend to be technology forcing. So we just now have regulations for the first time on these forever chemicals, PFAS, in drinking water. They survive court challenges. Utilities are going to have to do a heck of a lot to reduce these very tiny but very dangerous concentrations in our drinking water. And there's some ways that, scientists have already figured out how to do that. I think the challenge for the Renew folks is going to be doing that at the scale necessary for all of these different chemicals. There's some 9,000 plus PFAS that have been manufactured and are in our environment and aren't going away anytime soon. And then also to do it at a cost-effective scale. And I think Elena just kind of hinted on this or touched on this. The point, I think, for a lot of regular folks who are not in this room is that we take water for granted. We take our Great Lake for granted. And there were efforts in the 60s and 70s to clean up the pollution that you could see. You know, the green stuff, brown stuff coming out of a pipe and going into, say, the Calumet River or the Chicago River. Unfortunately, it still happens sometimes in the Chicago River. But we've done an amazing job reducing that type of pollution, not only in our local rivers and streams, but also in the Great Lakes. The challenge now is for the things that we don't see, like these tiny forever chemicals that are measured. They're so dangerous, they're measured in parts per trillion. And that's insanely small. And so the challenge of getting those out of our water supply and as a result protecting our public health is really paramount. So I would hope you two could discuss more about how this pie in the sky becomes practical innovation that can work not only here but everywhere.
Yeah. Well, we thought we would try to show, not tell, but it seems like, again, we have a bunch of selective separation familiar people in the room. Can I move this for a second?
Yes, you can.
So we brought a little demo because we love science demos. Here we go. Hang on. I can just... Okay. Yeah. So we thought we would just, by way of our favorite piece of kitchen technology, try to explain the difference between filters and membrane technology and what exactly we're going to try to do in Renew. So if you could just imagine for a second that this is all going on, you've all been shrunk down. It's like Ant-Man and Wasp Quantumania. And you are tiny, and we are all tiny together. And this, just imagine, this has come out of a mine. We've been mining for some critical minerals that we need to put in phones, technology, everything we make. So this mine water, it's got wastewater, but it's also got a bunch of minerals clacking around in there. And that mine wastewater is going to flow eventually back into our waterways. So we need to have some way of filtering out those materials because we'd like eventually to get them back. So we pour them into this filter, which imagine is made of something fancier than my Chemex paper filter. Okay, and then we're going to get them all in there. Okay. Now, Jinhong, what's going on here?
So it's a typical separation process, right? We're separating these solid rocks from the water, liquid water, right? So that's what we can do right now. You can separate everything all together.
Right. So like this, not valuable. This, critical mineral. This might be something like lithium, cobalt, nickel, something that's in scarce supply in the environment. But we've got to get it all. Now it's all mixed together. Now what do we do with that? We've got to...
Yeah, so what we're going to accomplish in the Renew engine is to do something a little bit different than here. Two things. One is we're going to deal with objects that is 100 million times smaller than these rocks. We're talking about, you know... nanometer or even sub-nanometer, you know, size of those ions, right? We're going to separate them. Secondly, we're going to selectively separate them, which means we're going to selectively separate one of its type, right, so that we can gain purity of those materials. And also, you know, it's more energy efficient, mm-hmm. right? So two things. Achieving selection of little ions that is 100 million times smaller than the rocks we see here, and then also selectively to take out one particular type of ion or other, Nutrients, critical minerals we just talked about,
right,
for beneficial use.
Right. And this is important because all of this, we have to be able to concentrate it down into quantities big enough to use it as inputs in, for example, we just had a battery manufacturer announce that they'd be building their operations in the West Loop this week. That's great news. They need a domestic source of supply for the component parts of those batteries. And so if we're able to efficiently get it out of dirty wastewater from one place and bring it into the supply chain,
Exactly. Efficiently,
that's really a success.
Yeah, one thing we need to keep, just like this filtration process or separation process, is to make it cost-effective. We can own it every household, for example, right? So cost-effective approach to realize those goals we just talked about.
Great, and thank you. And that relies on, I would say, a lot of chemistry, a lot of molecular engineering to be able to make a membrane that is much fancier.
Exactly.
More expensive than this filter.
So we're going to approach this using several different ways. One is to make materials that are functionalized with molecules to provide affinity to a particular type of ions to be separated. Or we can engineer bugs, bacteria, to take in some of these ions and then spit them out, you know, for beneficial use. So we're going to explore those different approaches to realize those two goals.
Great. So by the end of the 10 years, we'll all have selective separation on our kitchen tables, counters, right next to the Chemex where we make our coffee, and we'll be part of the domestic supply chain of batteries. Yeah?
Sort of. That seems good.
Okay, good.
Really exciting.
Hopefully you learned something there. That's good. We thought that'd be helpful. We can leave this here, I guess. You can all look at it. Great. So that's what it's
all
about.
Show not tell.
Yeah,
right. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
And we can think about many things. For example, the Water Reclamation District has to remove legally out of our sewage, right? They have to deal with things like phosphorus. We're running out of phosphorus. If we could get that out and use it,
right,
reuse it, that would be huge for life, essentially. You folks tend to take it for granted that water is going to be key to our future economy. In the past, the Great Lakes were known for heavy industry, industries that needed lots of water, mostly to cool big machinery.
Yeah.
What you seem to be talking about is different. It's a newer economy. It's something that maybe doesn't use as much water, but is still water reliant. How do you see Current Renew essentially getting industry, local, state, regional leaders to be on the same page about that question, about how we get there, and essentially jumpstart that?
Yeah, I think we're just at the beginning of this conversation. The first thing we needed to do was explain to the many different industries that use it. They know how much water they're using, but the average consumer doesn't understand that a manufacturing company is in the blue economy and part of the blue economy and dependent on water. So we put out our report, Upstream Illinois, basically to do just that. Size up the blue economy. Who are the industries that depend on our water? And who are the industries that are making solutions? Because it's that supply-demand side together that is the sum total of industries in the blue economy, jobs in the blue economy, economic output, all the things that the National Science Foundation is frankly interested in fueling. We needed to do just a baseline understanding of who were they, how do we get that done. The second thing we needed to do was get a leadership table set up where we're demanding and, you know, asking these industry leaders to stand up and say what their commitments to water sustainability are. And they're all, many of them in our region are already starting to do this, and that's great news, but we really needed to kind of set that frame and say, look, it's an advantage to be located here. You should build that into the attraction strategy for the state and the city, because we've not been doing that either, and that's a really important opportunity. But we only can attract industry to come here if they're going to bring the best stewardship practices to be taking care of our water for the long term. I think that's the thing we've got to get exactly right.
Exactly. Can I comment on that?
Yeah, sure.
I think, you know, it's, some of these industries are familiar to all of us that will benefit all of us, right? I'll give you three examples, right? One is the battery and EV manufacturers, right? So to manufacture a lithium-ion battery pack in our electric vehicles, it takes 7,400 gallons of water.
Yeah.
Right? Think about that. That's about 1 month of use of average American family, you know, of water use, right? In 1 month, you make one battery pack for EV, right? So that's significant. The second, you know, interesting, really exciting industry is about artificial intelligence, quantum, and semiconductor manufacturing. it takes a lot of water as well. You know, we need a lot of data to train machine learning and artificial intelligence models, right? We need data centers
right.
that needs to be cooled by water, right? A lot of this water. Although, you know, it's really exciting to see quantum computing coming up to speed potentially in the future. And then it can be more efficient in terms of computation, less, you know, water consumption. That's really good.
Yeah.
Then finally, agriculture,
yeah.
right? That's really yeah. Familiar to all of us in this region. You know, in the global scale, you know, 70% of the water is used for agricultural irrigation.
Right.
In the U.S., it's about 40%, right? So that's huge percentage. So what we are going to accomplish in this renewable engine is not only looking at the water angle to attract these water-intensive manufacturers to our region, but also looking at other aspects of manufacturing that connects this energy, water, food all together, right? We're going to recover the critical minerals that are needed for battery manufacturing. To really meet the supply chain challenge we are facing, and also you know, taking out the nutrients
right.
that are released from agricultural runoff to promote algae bloom that is really bad for our surface water, but now turn them into fertilizers, right, for beneficial use. So a lot of those connectivities among water, food, and energy, very exciting stuff.
So I mentioned that earlier. I'm sorry, I mentioned that earlier about just how small some of these things are that you want to recover, but then there's the issue of what we don't want in our water, and the concentrations being increasingly tiny in the parts per trillion, parts per quadrillion.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the science about how difficult it's going to be to address that.
Mm-hmm.
If our standards, if our regulations based on the science are going in that direction,
yeah.
how can we do that and not essentially saddle everybody with a giant water bill increase?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is so important. You know, take an example of the PFAS. You know, for those of you who are not familiar with PFAS, it's a family of chemical compounds containing this carbon fluorine bond, which is one of the strongest chemical bonds we know, right? And these chemicals are very versatile. They are used in our non-stick well, in our waterproof clothing, in firefighting foams. It's almost everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, you know, once they are released into the environment, they stay there because they are not going to degrade anytime soon. The chemical bond is so strong, right? So, but unfortunately, these chemicals are producing detrimental effects to our health, you know, compromising our immune systems, damaging our organs, and potentially leading to cancers, etc. Now, the exciting news we have seen recently is U.S. EPA is finally introducing a regulatory standard for these PFAS compounds, right? Limiting the amount of PFAS in our drinking water, for example, to down to 4 parts per trillion. You mentioned it. This is super low concentration, right? So the challenge is how to measure them, how to take them out, right? We have some of the technologies available to us. But the challenge is the standard, the limit, is so low
right.
in terms of concentration. Even if you achieve 99% of the efficiency, you're still leaving 1% of something that is relatively high that could be a problematic, right? So there's a lot of challenge to that effect. So what Renew is going to do is to design materials, again, to add that affinity to selectively separate those PFAS compounds. That gives us a better chance to achieve this remediation because PFAS is present with all the other contaminants. You know, we talked about, you know, heavy metals, nutrients
right.
that are at a much higher concentration. So
right.
when you expose the same filtration material to all these contaminants, it saturates with other things, but not PFAS. Right.
right.
So that's the importance of achieving selective separation. And we're going to make it happen through the Renew engine.
Yeah.
And we're going to make it happen at a cost-effective fashion so that these technologies can be deployed everywhere and anywhere, right, to really help protect our health.
Yeah, I think it's worth calling out. I mean, regulation, I think people sometimes unfairly think of it as like an innovation killer. In this sense, I think we really are looking
technology
to regulation.
First.
Yeah,
yes.
exactly. We're looking for regulation to be a technology, an innovation driver, because when we have regulation that is forcing changes on the way that we're paying attention to this particular class of chemicals, industry's taking notice. And that's really important because we need both industry and utility at the table to be piloting and co-creating solutions with us. This isn't something that's going to get invented in the lab and suddenly rolled out at scale. And I think that is an important part of the story of Great Lakes Renew, is having end users, community, utilities, and industry all at the table helping to shape what the solutions look like and how they can get rolled out.
And I think before I get to a few questions from the audience, just a kind of geeky question here. Most people in this room probably understand that, you know, drinking water treatment, sewage treatment is a multi-step process. Essentially, yeah. I think what you're talking about is adding a few extra steps to deal with some of those things that you need to screen out at a higher level, and then maybe another step for, say, the PFAS. So you're collecting at one point, you're removing at another point, and then the downstream effect is cleaner waters.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, that's great. So a few questions from the audience. This is getting at something you mentioned about your 8th anniversary. Congratulations.
Thank you.
This person wants to know, what has been the hardest part of starting an enterprise with multi-sector funding?
Oh, because that's such a great question. What empathic souls in the audience today. Well, I'm not the founder, so I should clarify that. So I did not have the startup challenges. I've started up many things, but I specifically came to Current because I was interested in seeing what a scale-up could be and what that problem could be. I think it's not just about the funding, but in general, the central challenge of being a hub is that we have many different customers and many different audiences. And if you talk to entrepreneurs, which we do all the time, who are building companies, they'll tell you the number one thing is to know your customer. Find your customer, know your customer, and build your product to that customer. Well, we have like 12 different customers. We've got research universities, national labs, community partners, workforce development experts, public entities like utilities, you know, our economic development agency, the environmental advocates that we work with. So it's a very big range of partners and advocates, and we do have to think a lot about how we communicate our message to all of those important stakeholders, but also the general public, because this matters at scale. This is not just, you know, it doesn't just matter for the few people and growing who are learning about Current and what we're doing. So I would say that's the central challenge, is the constant navigation and really thinking about how we're going to get our message across to different audiences. Great question.
Like any other challenge, it brings opportunities to us, right? It helps us to create the best solutions potentially, right, to address those challenges.
Yeah, that's right.
I think this is a corollary. This is a great follow-up question, actually, from someone else in the audience who asked, many who have ventured into the waste-to-wealth space have focused on technical and technological solutions. How can we stand up initiatives that activate a new set of customers so they pay for these resources?
Interesting.
This is almost like identifying the customer before the customer knows, perhaps, that they want to be the customer.
Right. So I think this comes back to what I was saying at the end of the last question about end users. Mm-hmm. And I think the National Science Foundation knows, and a lot of government, I think, is learning, that when we create solutions without input from the people who might be the likely users early in the process, we end up with solutions that don't fit. And I think we see that play out over and over again. That's not just true in our world of climate and science and technology. It's true in the social sciences and social services. So I think the idea of listening to the end user and listening to community, to utilities, in our case also to industry, which is likely to be an adopter, an early adopter of some of this technology, is really, really important. And I think that, again, goes back to knowing who is the end user. We are inventing solutions that could be deployed at utilities, at wastewater treatment plants. Some could be picked up by industry. That's a totally different scaling challenge. And some could even be, like, going back to the Chemex on the table or the Brita on your counter, some could be for consumers, for direct-to-consumer. And I think that means a lot of listening and understanding all those different audience segments.
Exactly. You know, we already have, you know, we have wonderful partners in this coalition and this region. You know, I will use one example, this MWRD, you know, who's already doing recovery of nutrients and converts them into fertilizer that can be sold to farmers and, you know, to save their, you know, energy cost and their farming cost, etc. So we can learn so much from what MWRD has already been doing. In the meantime, we could potentially, you know, open up new opportunities for some of the materials we are recovering, right, towards, you know, battery manufacturing and other things. So it takes a lot of learning, like what Elena just mentioned, you know, to have conversations with our critical stakeholders, understanding the potential customer needs and pains, so that we can identify those market opportunities.
So a lot of groups like this seem to be focused or tend to lean towards startups. And this is another question from the audience. How can small businesses that are not incubators or startups participate in this water, blue-green transformation? How can innovative processes that aren't at a startup or an incubator get attention and take advantage of what you're planning to do here?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I would start by saying water innovation is for everyone. All of us can take actions to innovate in the ways that we're using water. I think we often tend to focus, though, a little bit too much on like what the individual consumer can do and a little bit less than we need to on what large-scale system change could accomplish. So we're focused a lot on that right now. But I think to the small to mid-sized business question, you can always do a water audit. Like, it starts kind of at home with your practices. What are you doing? I think people don't realize how much water consumption drives energy costs. So if you're building a climate plan, a climate resiliency plan for your business, thinking about water as part of that is really, really important. A lot of the cost of treating and moving and managing our water really drives up our energy consumption. And again, that's kind of hidden from view for a lot of people. In Renew, we have small and mid-sized businesses as well. Everyone that is working in some way in water is an employer. So you're creating jobs and thinking about how to source talent for those jobs and grow good paying careers, you know, and advancement. There's a role to play there as well. So I think, you know, we need businesses small and large across the spectrum to be thinking about this, caring about it, prioritizing it, and happy to talk more about how.
And I'm just going to add my own follow-up question to that. I think because we sit on so much water, we take it for granted, but there isn't necessarily an incentive
to say
what you talked about earlier, reusing wastewater for industrial purposes, for example. Or you could make an argument, just for argument's sake, why is Joliet building a $31 million, billion-dollar pipeline to bring Lake Michigan water that far inland? Mm-hmm. Couldn't they be doing something else for maybe even less money? Mm-hmm. But there's no incentive for that.
Yeah.
How do you see this coalition, this combination of interests, perhaps changing that?
Yeah. So I think this is the thing we have to get right in this region. We have to start using our attraction incentive packages. Think about all the things that we give to industry that we want to come here because they bring jobs, they bring innovation, they bring all sorts of other things that are high value for the region. We could also be asking them to think about how to use their water differently. We can do that. We can be at the same table bringing that negotiating point. And this is coming up over and over. So in 10 years, we want to have a portfolio of win stories that we're about attracting those next economy businesses who are not going to put the big bad stuff in the lake that you're talking about, Michael, from the old industrial revolution. Not that, but they're still going to be using our water, and we want them to be helping drive the change to using treated wastewater, which we don't do well. Nevada does because they have a scarcity driver, right? We don't have those market incentives, so we've really got to get ahead of that. What we do well here is plan and make plans that can be actionable, and I think we can look ahead to a future where the demand on our water looks a lot different than it does today. And it doesn't have to be here tomorrow for us to start acting ahead of the game. And we've got to get that right. Otherwise, once it's a crisis, it's too late.
Right. I think the extreme example would be the Aral Sea in the former Soviet Union.
Exactly.
Once an amazing body of water, huge driver of the economy in that part of the world, it's basically bone dry today because of mismanagement. Now, nobody's saying it's going to be like the end of that Will Ferrell movie and the robots are in the middle of a dry Lake Michigan bed. But still,
I haven't seen that.
We could be doing better.
Yeah, definitely. Technology can play a role as well. I know my colleague Seth Starling from Argonne National Laboratory is in the audience. He wrote books, you know, on water is really local, right? So if you wanted to transport water for long distance, it will consume a lot of energy, right? So the technology comes into play when we develop new technologies that is competitive in terms of performance and cost. Then there's an incentive for people to adopt those technologies, right, to drive different approaches to address the water challenge.
Yeah, And I should have said, what we could do well, what we've historically done well, is plan. I think we have a lot of work to do planning on regional water consumption. Like, we're thinking about this. We have a lot more work to do on that and better forecasting, frankly, which is hard to do because I don't think the future is going to look a lot like the past. Like, that's going to be difficult to predict.
Well, and it's interesting. I can remember back to the, sorry to bring him up, but the Blagojevich years. The state, one of the smart things that that administration did was they actually plotted out water use, not only in Northeast Illinois, but also downstate.
That's right.
The draw on the Mahomet Aquifer, which is the major aquifer supplying agriculture in downstate Illinois. And they found that roughly by the time we're living in now and a few years from now, that's going to be under extreme stress. And we have the issue now where we have either too much water or too little.
That's right.
And so that seems to be another driver for why we should change our ways, essentially. And at that point, I'm going to put in a plug for a good friend of mine, Peter Annan. He wrote the book, The Great Lakes Water Wars, which is an excellent book. His follow-up is called Purified. Highly recommend reading it. It's a quick read. It's about using treated wastewater for drinking water, which places like San Diego, Nevada, they're already doing it because they have to. Mm-hmm. But I think what Current Renew are talking about is, do we need to be using our valuable fresh water for every single purpose? The answer almost definitely is no.
Right. And other places are demonstrating that today. Right. And it will create more abundant opportunity if we're able to make the shift that allows us to have more residents and more industry in this region. We were built for a lot more people than we have today.
Right.
And that's, I think we need to look at it that way. What is this region globally equipped to sustain?
Yeah, I think it's, most people maybe don't realize that our conservation efforts, we're spreading more Lake Michigan water to more people, but using less of it, in part because we don't have as much heavy industry. But also the conservation measures in terms of like replacing leaky water mains, things like that. That's been a huge endeavor, but we still have these other issues, lead in our water supply, these other chemicals that are not just becoming regulated, that we need to address and address in a more cost-effective manner with smarter filters, smarter membranes, whatever you want to call it, right?
Yep.
Smarter materials.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really intrigued by the idea of also making money off of waste that way. Right, by singling out something like lithium or cobalt, that is essentially conflict minerals and other substances that we increasingly rely on in our economy. So this is fantastic and a great discussion. We have time for maybe one more question from the audience. Anybody else want to raise a hand? Yes.
I'm Mary Ager with Global Water Works, and I just love what you've been doing, Elena. I've been there for the 8 years, but excited to see the interconnectedness. I wonder how you're looking at the purification of lakes as it relates to Great Lakes and all the phosphorus issues plaguing our lakes today as it flows into Pure Power Water.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the live stream could hear the question. So it was basically what we're doing to think about the contamination in the Great Lakes from nitrogen and phosphorus, which for us, and thank you for the question, this speaks to the importance, I think, of working across a broad region. So many may know Lake Erie is particularly suffering from the effects of nitrogen and phosphorus contamination and these what they call HABs, which are harmful algal blooms that essentially crush and kill everything, all the prosperity of that lake. And it's been a devastating problem for Ohio. But what that has done is really driven their governors going back, actually, to drive change in the way they manage their watersheds. Not as much as we need, probably, sure, like, but it's a slow process. But we can look to Ohio. I think we have things to learn,
strange but true.
Important part of our... Right, and I think the bipartisan coalition that we've built in Renew, that's going to be critical for the sustained, integration of this effort. But I would say yes. So all of the technology we're talking about that is about addressing nitrogen and phosphorus, and that recovery is also applicable in contexts that look a lot different than here in Illinois, where we're sending all of that largely downstream and crushing economies and ecologies in the Gulf of Mexico and downstream in the river, in the Mississippi watershed, which is a horrible problem that, you know, unfortunately, because it's not directly, usually in our backyard, we're not feeling it in as intense a way as Ohio has been. So it speaks to the importance of regional management of this watershed system, for sure.
Well, and as a historical point, earlier Lake Erie algae blooms were a big driver in the 1972 Clean Water Act.
Right,
so,
that's right.
Right, I've interviewed scientists whose whole professional life started with trying to get algae out of Lake Erie. Here they're at retirement age, and it's back in an even more intense and dangerous and harmful way. And then you have the inland lakes.
Yeah.
You know, I spent a lot of time on inland lakes in Wisconsin, Michigan, New York. Algae blooms everywhere.
Everywhere.
You know, you've got alerts for harmful algae blooms almost every summer now. So, and a lot of that's perhaps from septic tanks, inadequate sewage treatment, things like that. Anyway, there are solutions there if they're applied more broadly.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this has been great.
Talking about sewage at lunch is what we love to
do. Oh, yeah.
So come by anytime, all day, every day.
I always say that my job always comes back to that word poop, basically. It's a family audience, but you know the word I'm thinking of.
Thank you so much for moderating
this
conversation.
Thank you.
Always wonderful to see you.
And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jackie's back.
Thank you so, so much. Yeah, this is the conversation that you have, and sometimes it's talking about poop. But it was so, so informative, and I don't know about everyone here. I see a lot of new faces, so maybe this is some of the stuff that you all talk about all the time, but certainly we have a surface knowledge. I think you all said something that was important, that water innovation could be for everyone, and we all can do something. And yes, we do have the Brita things on our counter, but there's so much more that we all can do. And, you know, we have the most precious commodity, like Michigan, so, you know, we don't take that for granted. Thank you all three of you, for the conversation. And as Dan would say, there's certainly more to come. The two books that you mentioned, who was the author for those?
Purify.
Yeah. Oh, Peter Annan?
You go first.
Oh. Dr. Seth Stalin is sitting over there. You know, just Google, Seth Stalin.
Saw him the other day.
The books.
Yeah. Oh, with the book, we have the books?
Huh?
We have the books here?
Not here. Search online.
We'll give you the link to make sure it gets attached to this wonderful
Perfect. Okay. I'm sure Andy and Amanda can handle that. Okay. Thank you all so, so very much. Please look out for continued programming. I think Dan mentioned that we'll have President Steele soon enough on this subject. And I think there are some other conversations about the things that we're talking about here, water and just making sure that we are sustainably conscious. That's a word that we use at our corporation a lot, so at my firm. So please look out. Keep a look on the calendar for upcoming events. And as I always say, call early to get your seat, because when we're out of seats, we're out of seats. So thank you again. I know we went a little bit over. Sometimes we get a little bad, you know, we get tapped in the hand about that. But when the conversation is worth it, I think it's certainly worthy of it. Thank you all so much. I don't want to delay your afternoon anymore. It's a beautiful day. So thank you all for being here. And we are adjourned.